You're all welcome to today's Coalition for Revolution webinar on some very critical issues of concern to the working masses today. We are happy to have four great speakers, and we start with Professor Toyi Olorode. Is a towering figure in the socialist movement who has inspired generations of activists since the early 1970s. He was detained 30 years ago by the Babangida regime on trumped-up charges and released only with a mass uproar by working-class people and students' organizations. He's a botanist academically, but is a Renaissance man in terms of knowledge. Now to the question. Nigeria is a very rich country, but also the poverty capital of the world. Could you kindly put the systemic relationship of corruption with exploitation of the working people in perspective for us and highlight how the people have resisted?
Thanks very much. This matter has become quite topical, especially in the last few months. With all kinds of revelations about what's happening under the Buhari regime. I want to start by saying that generally, corruption is viewed as use of facility for wrong purposes. Change, something is corrupted when it's changed from good to bad, from authentic to fake. In terms of governance, corruption in governance about not using power to serve the public. Subversion of public morality, use of public resources to serve private ends. Talking about governance, part of the business of corruption is reneging on electoral promises, reneging on mandates that are given people who claim that they win elections. If you take this APC thing, there was one NLC mass action in which a banner was carried up front and APC was characterized as all promises cancelled. Now, because all kinds of promises were made, how there will be power 24 hours of the day, how all children will be fed in schools, how the naira is going to go back to $1 to $1. Now, this fundamentally for me, corrupt practices, reneging on mandates, reneging on electoral promises, and so forth. Beyond all of this, corruption is also about promotion of private aggrandizement, deification of leaderships, erection of public monuments while a leader is still alive to deify him or her, naming streets after people who have very minimal contact with people or impact on people's lives. You look at Abuja, there's no name that is not there, including all sorts of people who have really messed up our people. But all of these have material base. These are all moral categories that I've tried to whatever, but they have a material base. And it's about what made all of this possible is how society produces its needs and reproduces itself. You know, I'm just trying to catch up with this, your technology.
I didn't want to break this, but I really thank you.
Okay, comrade. Yeah. Okay, but so let me really say that in the last like 60 years or so, the business of corruption has been a big issue in public domain. And you know, the very first coup in 1966 was, if you read Chukwuma Nzeogwu's broadcast, it was about corruption, the 10%ers, and so on and so forth. Then go on, the Taka story, Dabo story, and so on. In 1976, when Gowon decided to on handing over power to civilians, one of his 9-point program that they need to finish before handing over was to defeat corruption. So, you know, this thing has been on, and every regime claims that it's fighting corruption. And Murtala's brief intervention gave people some hope that some change was going to come, but Obasanjo's intervention simply coincided with the taking over all again of our country by imperialism and international finance, and started what finally became the structural adjustment program in December 1983 and led to the Buhari coup. But you know, the intervention of, again, they talk about corruption. Even under Babangida and the entrenchment of neoliberalism, privatization, and accumulation, which is really what corruption is about. They don't tell us this. They want to fight corruption, but they don't want to fight primitive and private accumulation. All of them hid all of this element of the thing about corruption. And of course, you know, all the brutality of military regime until 1999, all of this have effects on ordinary people. They change laws, they abrogated laws, and they use state power to entrench their policies and so on. And therefore, of course, created a lot of resistance, as you know. And this resistance, of course, created a lot of repression by overlapping regimes of the Nigerian ruling class. Now, again, even after 1999, if you read Okonjo-Iweala's book, Reforming the Unreformable, she claimed that they tamed corruption. But we know that under Obasanjo, corruption, in fact, became state policy. Again, there are all kinds of responses to the Okonjo-Iweala claim about how they tamed it. It was just an illusion that they tried to, of course, again, privatization, entrenchment of neoliberal accumulation, and a lot of very massive private accumulation that we see all over the place in the GRAs, in who bought all the public properties that were sold, and all of that. All of these were there. Even international capital, their friends abroad, with the World Bank, the IMF, at a point got so scared about the consequences of mass action against the regime they sponsor in the peripheries. And they themselves started yelling about corruption, although, again, it's just for public consumption, because in the metropolises, like America, in many parts of Europe, it is the same noise about corruption that they make every day. The major wars are started because some people want to make money. Many people, organizations and corporations make a whole lot of money, spilling people's blood across the world and all of that. So we see the rise of neoliberalism as part of the entrenchment of corruption, both in the metropolises and in the peripheries. So this is why, in a way, the post-Obasanjo Jonathan whatever, by the ruling class, the coalition they formed, the ruling class formed, in my view, is the strategic focus on anti-corruption, because they know that the people are worried, people are annoyed. So it was a very important issue to raise as a campaign issue. But as we said, all along, people saw that nothing really have changed. And especially in recent times, with some of the revelations that So, and of course, this is also because, in spite of all the anti-corruption noise under Buhari, the foundations of accumulation, primitive and private accumulation, have not changed. So for me and for many people, corruption is a symptom. It's not a cause. But they try to tell us that corruption is really the cause. Corruption is a symptom. If you have a country or a polity in which people are persuaded that the way to go is private accumulation, that all public property must be sold, that social services cannot be given to people unless they can pay, in that kind of polity, you cannot stop corruption, because accumulative power is political power. That's why there's nobody who become governor or minister or somebody does not become a major millionaire or billionaire, okay? So accumulation power is entrenched by political power, because politics itself is described as the authoritative allocation of the power to make authoritative allocation of resources. So you see that all the people who had friends near the treasury or who had their hands inside the treasury became massively rich people. And as I said, this is because this accumulative power is also expressed largely as class power. So a whole lot of what we see are really intra-class debates and quarrels in Nigeria, around which they then mobilize ordinary people to come and line up behind them every 4 years. I'm saying this because if you look at what the Buhari crowd have been doing, nothing really fundamentally changed. In fact, it was 2 years into the regime, I think in May 2017, that they finally launched what they call the Economic Recovery and Growth Program, ERGP. And if you look at ERGP, it is fundamentally an advanced form of SAP, predicated almost, entirely on neoliberal concepts of how to run economy and so on and so forth. So these are my own understanding of this thing about corruption. It is the foundational issue that the policy, economic policy, the ideology of the ruling class is about accumulation, achieved largely by political power. And when this power is in the hands of a ruling class that is just committed to accumulation. And Claude Ake said this long ago, 1978, that really the preoccupation of the ruling class in the peripheries is accumulation, and is responsible for a whole lot of crises, social and political crises that we witness in the peripheries. Thank you, comrade.
We now go to the second speaker, Barrister Esther Uzoma. Comrade Uzoma is a rights activist, the national coordinator of proactive gender initiatives, an NGO that fights for the rights of women, children, and vulnerable persons. She is also the co-convener of the Nigerian Civil Society Situation Room, which is an umbrella body of NGOs in Nigeria. Esther is principal partner of the Heptagon and Associates Law Firm. Esther, you're very much welcome to take the floor, please.
The issue at hand, you know, I would like to suggest, personally speaking, that the era, you know, of primitive accumulation of wealth using state powers is here upon us once again. But one critical thing that we must do, particularly as CSOs, is that we must become evangelical about rights. We must become evangelical in our approach. What do I mean? If we have to look at what, you know, the disciples on the day of Pentecost, they became fearless. When that fire rested on them, they became fearless. They went everywhere. They spoke, they taught. One of the critical things that we are lacking right now is knowledge. Enthusiasm without knowledge. And so you find so many young people eager for a change. But the knowledge gap is enormous. You know, way back in the day, perhaps in the days of Prof that just spoke, people took time to learn. People also took time to educate. But we have, you know, a very young population that is still growing, that is dependent absolutely on Western media for education. It is Hollywood that educates us. If Hollywood is not educating us, then Nollywood is misinforming us. If it is not Hollywood or Nollywood, then we are watching the drama of our elected officials on TV. So the knowledge gap, people, we cannot do more than we know. It's impossible. And so we find a young, you know, youthful generation filled with enthusiasm that is lacking in knowledge. And so I suggest that we must go to the marketplaces, and I mean it literally, where people gather. Somebody has to teach. Somebody has to teach. So that this quest for a change, you know, this quest for a new Nigeria, let it be knowledge-based. The Aluta we are seeing now is the Aluta based on money. The Aluta we are seeing now, particularly in the universities, you see, is the Aluta that politicians know they can pay for. That conviction, that core conviction that comes from knowledge is not there anymore. And so we find that we are divided, particularly even in the CSO world, our ranks are divided. our ranks, and because our ranks, we have not realized that truly we have just one common enemy: bad governance. So it's either a Westerner, it's either an Easterner from the South or from the North. We are just masses, all right? We are the ones who suffer. Right now, for instance, you will find that people cannot travel abroad. The airspaces are blocked and all that. But the elites, if you charter a plane, you can go anywhere you want. Somebody, that knowledge gap is not, you know, nobody is filling it. And so you find that the youths, Nigerian youths of today, we exist, you know, at the mercy of the highest bidder. Who can pay for a looter? Who can rent a crowd? Who wants a crowd of agitators? Who wants it? You pay for it. Rent a crowd pioneered by the student bodies, you know, who have taken up offices in the very Aso Rock. And so once we adopt, we must first of all imbue ourselves with knowledge, and we must take the pains to educate. It is that education that makes a man or a woman convinced. And when the souls, when somebody is convinced about a cause, nothing will bring that person. So because we do not have, how can we possibly organize? What are we talking? How would the new Nigeria come if we do not know better? Look at the charade in NDDC. And there are Robin Hoods in NDDC who are not questioning where the monies are going to. They rather take their monthly stipends. Because there's no, you know, it has not occurred to us that, listen, this is all we have. You can no longer judge to India. This is it. Nigeria is it for us. And so I propagate. Even as people are accumulating wealth in a primitive manner, how are we accumulating knowledge? What do we know? What is coming out from where? Nothing. Just that you see a bunch of Nigerian youths angry about the system and lacking in know-how. What do I do about it? How do I approach? And so for me, the CAOs, CSOs, which, by the way, includes that CSO, you know, includes everybody who is not bearing arms, all right? And with the proliferation of light arms in this country right now, you just appreciate that it's a very limited space. And so knowledge. That's why I thank God I like this series, this webinar series, you know, the platform giving us the opportunity. But we must go to the, we must assume an evangelical approach, first of all, to imbue people with knowledge, facts about Nigeria, facts about governance, National Assembly, constituency projects, all that, so that wherever we are, from our little spaces, you know, we begin to engage government. We engage the councillors, we engage the chair. From our little domain, that is how we will bring about the change. Because believe me, when we engage in our little domains and our little spaces, of course it will not be televised. How will change? How is it? It's inconceivable. We are living in a time, we are living in a country, you know, a predatory system that runs a predatory system. Crocodiles eating their own eggs. So without knowledge, really, we cannot bring about change. Without knowledge, we cannot, you know, even commence the process of bringing in our own Nigeria. Without, actually, it's on strike now. How many months? So who is teaching our youths right now? Think about it. Where is the knowledge coming from of what to do? So for me, the role that the civil society must play is to ensure that knowledge, you know, is broken down to Ishekiri language, Yoruba language, Hausa, Igbo. That knowledge about governance, so that let's demystify it based on knowledge. If we do this, perhaps we can even begin to start that process, light that fire. You know, first for love for the country, and then for the betterment of the system. I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Esther. Esther spoke on what civil society organizations can do to address a situation where you see that the rot of corruption continues to fester, with vagabonds in power continuing to steal public funds. And she has pointed out there the critical importance of mass political education. Education is central to providing leadership, a counter-hegemonic leadership, reaching out to the people, talking, explaining, And they say knowledge is power. Thank you very much for that, Esther. Our third panelist is Dr. Osage Obayiwana. Comrade Osage is a long-standing activist who has played and continues to play significant roles in building resistance oppression in Nigeria. A radical lecturer in the 1980s Faculty of Law at the University of Benin, he resigned from the academia to protest the repressive rule of the Vice Chancellor Grace Alile Williams. Apart from being a thinker, he's a practical fighter and is currently president of the Committee for the Defense of Human Rights. Comrade Osage, there has been a rising wave of attacks on human rights under this regime. Why do you think this is the case? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, comrade. I want to say that it's a pleasure to be here. Has resistance waned? Are our people tired of fighting for their rights? I don't think so. I know that you are using the 1980s, early 90s as a reference point. We must recognize that at that particular period, we had a target, military dictatorship. Those who were not voted into office, who seized power illegally, who were doing precisely the opposite of what they proclaimed when they illegally seized power, who did not play by the rules. And at the level of decency, if a man runs a race and wins, he deserves the medal. In their arbitrariness, the military, because of the dictators, because of the self-perpetuation agenda they had, could not even abide by that. They came up with all kinds of excuses. Don't forget that ASUU, the NANs, the trade unions had collaborated way before the June 12th elections. And we had seen the military dictators for what they are, impostors, pretenders. But it took the annulment of the June 12th election for the mass of our people to see what we had seen many years before. So there's the way in which that struggle for the validation of June 12th resonated with a lot of our people, not just in Yoruba land, nationwide. And of course, our organizations played the leading role in that march, whereby not only the Nigerian masses were mobilized, we mobilized international opinion. The fight on the campuses that saw people like me leaving the campus, the war that had been waged against ASUU, the de-affiliation of ASUU from the NLC, is part and parcel of the process to prevent us from playing our historical role as far as the enlightenment of our masses through various organizations that my comrade that spoke just before me talked about. So there's a way in which when the office to the apparat, they were defeated. And of course, you remember how that ended. The killing of MKO Abiola Abacha, that struggle in the person of Obasanjo. So there's a way in which that created some kind of a lull. I have said that the target was very clear, but at least it reminds us of what happened during the flag independence, where the white men simply withdrew and brought people who speak our language, who look like us, who go to the church and to the mosque to become our leaders. But the system remained. So what I'm trying to say is that the issues appear to be wider now. We have gone through over 20 years of so-called democracy. And yet, we are not getting the dividends. We are not getting the benefits of democracy. So quite honestly, the fact that those who wear civilian clothing are occupying offices now, who have in fact perfected the act of corruption of our people, mostly during the legendary period, has gone a great length in confusing a lot of people, in demobilizing them, in adopting the wait and see attitude. But then the problems remain. So we are dealing with a new type of dictatorship of the minority for the interest of the minority. And this is the reason why we have this corruption and repression. Certainly our people are resisting in their little ways. But you agree with me that the storms are gathering now. So when you talk about, criticize and go to jail, it is because once again they feel that the system is threatened, they are being more fully exposed. All the subterfuge hiding behind religion and ethnicity are being broken down. And you can imagine a situation where they said if you share your opinion that is critical of office holders, not just at the level of Mr. President, but even at the level of governors, If you use the internet, if you use WhatsApp to circulate a critical view, the term that is cybercrime, for which people have been sent to jail under circumstances where even where the few courageous judges see through this scheme and grant bail, they still refuse to comply. You recall how long it took before the SSS will comply with the orders made by court concerning our comrade Omoyele Sowore. Journalists who were even lawyers. We are even talking about soldiers who criticize the chief of army staff for the poor job he's doing as far as security is concerned. And people like that are handed to jail, which suggests that really not much has changed. But the point is to appreciate that we are not just talking about civil and political rights, economic rights, social rights, cultural rights, the right to a job, the right to healthcare on the basis of need and not ability to pay, the right to housing, the right to education, the right to dignity. So even after all these years, in this era of COVID-19, many of our people do not have running water, not to talk about light. Purchase of soap on a regular basis to wash clothes and to wash their persons are challenging to quite a number of people. Minimum wage for the few that are employed, till date, payment of it is still not given effect to by a lot of states. So, you know, it's a natural phenomenon. Even the cow, when the cow is subject to a lot of fleas and ticks, it will stamp his foot, it will use his tail to drive away the flies. So I'm trying to say that resistance to this oppression, which I have said is beyond civil and political rights, but also economic rights, especially political rights, is a natural phenomenon. So it will not be entirely accurate to say that our people are not fighting back in their different ways. But I think the urgency of the situation is that from what is coming out of Nigeria presently, if the present ruling class has 1,000 years, these kinds of fundamental changes that our people have fought for historically will never come. So the issue, as had been canvassed, is that victims cannot continue to wait. The changes are overdue, and nobody else is going to bring about these changes other than the victims. So yes, to adopt, you should call it the evangelical approach, because we also have to talk about the content of the education. Actually, as we say, he who wears the shoes knows where he pitches. So we don't really need to remind people of what they go through, but perhaps it is to encourage them to appreciate that slavery would not end on the goodwill of the slave masters. It is the victims that must organize, because what we are dealing with is self-liberation. Somebody talked about the NDDC, which has its own peculiarities. It was supposed to have been a program designed to address the mess that Niger Delta has been turned into. And then after how many years, see what has happened, you know? So NDDC is a product of a system. There's a system that generates corruption. And that system is to be located in the scheme whereby minority seizes the wealth collectively created by the majority. And so the contract system is an incident of that. Overpriced contracts that are not intended to be performed is inherent in the system that is in place, the capitalist system that is in place in Nigeria today. So the issues have to be put squarely on our agenda, that we can have a Nigeria where I in every part of Nigeria right now, you see grown-up women who have psychiatric challenges walking around stark naked on our streets. We have people sleeping on the streets simply because they cannot afford to pay rent. How do you expect a family, the breadwinner of which is owed salaries on end, how do they survive? And so those who profit from the system right now are those who are using repression to sustain that system, to keep it going. And then they want the rest of us to wait that eventually the trickle-down theory, you know, will bring succor to the majority of our people. That is never going to come. So the point is that it is the victims that must say enough is enough. Yes, we are celebrating the first year anniversary of Revolution Now. Yes, Revolution Now, because these changes to bring about a system that is different is overdue. And so the urgency of it is one that must be propagated even evangelically. What was witnessed in the NDDC revelation exists in all spheres. It's the product of a system. And unless that system is addressed, then certainly there's no support that is going to come. NDDC, you can even see the 774,000 jobs that the Minister for Labor, you know, proposed, and how the National Assembly sought to hijack that project. In this mess that COVID-19 has brought about, you know that they are implementing the increase in the value-added tax. Petroleum price has been increased. Electricity tariffs have been increased. And for the first time in our history, we are talking about taxes on rent paid by tenants. So the government has articulated what they call economic sustainability plan, which does not address these fundamental issues. How can the majority appropriate and get the benefit of the wealth that is produced, you know, in this country? That is the fundamental issue. And that is the issue we have, you know, to pose before our people. So it's not really about the elections, because there are people who at this particular moment who are trying to focus our attention on, oh, should the next president come from the eastern part of the country, or they are going to abandon the rotational presidency. You know, where does the next president come from? Is it Okonjo Iweala, Peter Obi, or El-Rufai? The issue is, what system must we have in this country? What is the role of the people in bringing about that system? Who are the people in Nigeria who ought to bring about that system? We do know that there is the right to self-defense and the defense of one's interest. It appears as if the majority needs to be prodded to appreciate that they do have this right to protect their interests and to defend their rights. And these changes cannot be brought about other than through massive actions. So victims nationwide need to be organized, and to organize themselves, and to reach out across religious and ethnic divides to talk about this issue and not remain silent, and above all, to act and insist that these changes will stand for the benefit of the masses of our people, which ultimately is the real democracy in the interest of the majority of our people, which is long overdue, that the time is now for us to have this systemic change. I want to use this occasion to appreciate the initiative of ASCAP, because we appreciate that the COVID-19 pandemic and the challenges that have come with it have fully exposed the irresponsible nature of the ruling class in Nigeria. They are talking about going back to school without assuring how many of our schools have running water. So the way ASCAP is going about persistently canvassing these issues within civil society organizations, amongst labor organizations, amongst youth organizations, amongst those we now call workers in the informal sector, the traders, the farmers, the artisans, to appreciate the common fate that awaits them and the obligation to self, that they are the ones who must do something about it, and no better time than now. I think that is the issue that confronts us, and I'm glad for the opportunity to be a part of this discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Comrade Osagie. That was very insightful. And you did raise quite a number of things. I won't attempt to summarize them, just to point out two or three key things. One, that when talking of rights, I mean, the issue of social and economic rights, with the spate of demolitions, you know, the right to housing is being violated with impunity. I mean, you spoke about water. Less than 40%, about 40% of Nigerians don't have access to potable water. And a large number of even those that have access to it, they have to pay for it through Meruwa and stuff like that. And I would say also health, you know, despite the fact that Section 2 of the Constitution guarantees this is non-justiciable, a lot of people pay through their noses for that.